I am Marianne. I'm an alcoholic, and this is the Navajoo Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers meeting. Let's have an AA meeting. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speaker meeting on Navajoo. Where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story. And this reading that I'm going to read now is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our Navajoo room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear tonight's speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And tonight we have the wonderful Wanda O, that is with us to tell her story. And I don't know Wanda well, but I know her well enough that I love her. I love her program. I love her shares that I have heard her share many times at the 9:30 meeting. And she has touched me. I think everybody knows her. I take notes and did at the beginning and then stopped, and now I'm taking them again. So I'm sure I have quoted Wanda in my notebook. So with that, I give you Wanda.
Thank you, Marianne. Thank you, Marianne.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you for the introduction. And thank you for everything, you and Tim.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. Okay, my name is Wanda, and I am an alcoholic. I want to thank I just want to thank everybody for being here, you know. My name is Wanda. I am an alcoholic. And some of you say you've seen my face or whatever. Yes, I kind of roam the rooms of Napa, you know. That's one of the places that I hang out at. I've hung out there for many years. Finally became necessary for me to figure out a home group. And I chose the I Can't, We Can group because I was able to meet with them on Saturday mornings. Well, lo and behold, Zoom happened. And I'm able to be with them, you know, throughout the week a lot, you know. So I really enjoy the clubhouse, you know. I've always been able to walk in there and sit and just get a wealth of knowledge overall, you know, just from all the meetings and just get a wealth of knowledge. And sometime I'll share, but, you know, I'm kind of a quiet person. And you know, I would meet people and we would say our greetings and we would say goodbye. And that was that, you know. But with this I Can't, We Can situation group, you know, I have found a home. I also on the program, if you'll see it anywhere or whatever, it'll say that I have another home group, which is Cascade. And that's the 8 o'clock at night group. And I've been going there for many, many years until recently, over the past few years. And then I chose I Can't, We Can also. But now I see everybody on Zoom. Okay, so enough of that. All right. My name is Wanda, my alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 14th, just like Drew. My sobriety date is June 14th, 1994. So I've been sober about 27 years, and it kind of sneaked up there. It did. I was born in, I'm from Atlanta. I was born in 1958, which makes me 63. And I'm from Atlanta. I've been here all my life, except for a few years where I left and went to the military. But other than that, this is my home. I was born into my family. I have three older sisters. So it's four of us all together, all girls. And my mom and dad, you know, we were a family, you know. My father, he passed away when I was 5 years old. At the time that I was born, my sisters then were a good bit older than me. Their ages were 14, 11, and 9. So then here I come, you know. And then my dad passed away when I was 5. My mom raised me as a single parent after that point. My father worked a good job. You know, he worked for the railroad. So, you know, we were okay. But he was an alcoholic. And, you know, the tales that I've heard, you know, about him, you know, they were not good. You know, your typical alcoholic, you know, violence in the homes and things of that nature, you know. But he passed away when I was 5. Now, I never knew him or saw him as the alcoholic. I just saw him as my dad, you know, that I loved very much. But like I said, the tales that I heard, you know, the tales that I heard. So anyway, my mother raised me and my sisters, you know. And I was a very shy kind of person. You know, I went to school and, you know, of course everybody did. You know, I went to school and, you know, I was just a real shy kid, you know. But, you know, I managed to get on through. Smart. And then I found alcohol at the age of 14. That just changed my whole life right there. I was no longer the shy kid. But, you know, see, the thing about it, it's a funny thing. I was shy. I was quiet. But I was sneaky. Nobody ever knew that, like the cool kids at school, they didn't know I was drinking alcohol. But I was drinking alcohol. You know, I was drinking alcohol at home. Because, you know, I was a good kid, you know. But it really helped me to think. It helped me to laugh. It just helped me to do all kinds of things. I had a few friends, you know. And, you know, they knew I drank. My cousins, they knew I drank. A family member knew I drank. I think about the age of 14, and I remember a party that I went to at a family member's home, and the punch was spiked, okay? Well, I kept drinking and drinking and drinking, and I really got myself pretty sick, you know? And so when I came home, I had my first official, you know, toilet bowl, you know what I mean? I was all in it. And I was kind of sick. And my mom said, you know, that it was their fault. She never questioned me about what I was drinking. She said it was their fault for putting it in there. You know, but that was really some good punch. So anyway, like I say, I go on through high school, but I was a quiet drunk. You know, I was doing some of everything because, you know, I had boyfriends, you know. And I was doing a little bit of everything as far as trying to get the proper feeling in my head. The alcohol escalated into other things in addition to the alcohol. But it made me a better person. I felt like it did. You know, I was able to laugh and talk and all those good things. So about age 20, I decided to go into the military. I came home one day. I was in college, and I came home one day, and I told my mom, I said, next week I'll be in somewhere, Alabama, you know, for basic training. And then after that, I'll be spending a year overseas in Korea, you know, not fighting, but, you know, that's where I was going to be stationed for a year. There was no getting out of that. You know, during my teenage years, I was doing a lot of, like you said, I was just doing different things that were escalating, you know, and I had a couple of friends, you know, best friends, I had boyfriends and what have you, you know. And so I was starting to get into a little bit of trouble. And one day I was, it was just a simple traffic violation that they wrote me a ticket. And I was supposed to go to court to see about it. Something was expired. And I didn't go to court to see about it. They sent me another thing and said, you're in contempt of court. I didn't go see about that either. And the next thing I know, I got pulled over again, and they were taking me off to jail. So I was like, they are after my car. You know what I mean? They see my car, and, you know, it's drawing trouble, you know. But, you know, I was doing some other things, too, because I had something else on me that they didn't quite find. But I was doing some other things and stuff, too, and I just felt like it was best for me to go ahead and leave Atlanta because it was just, you know, just different stuff was happening. It was time to go, you know. Everybody else was going off doing their own thing, and I need to go off and see the world, you know. I also knew that I was doing a lot of different things, and one of the reasons I was in college, I wasn't really going to college. I kind of was leaving out the house every day, but I was not going to college, and I was able to manipulate and know how to drop classes and, you know, things like that and whatever I needed to do and continue on being enrolled, but I really wasn't doing anything. That's why I was able just to drop out of college because it was catching up with me too. All the lying, it was catching up with me. So anyway, so I went into the military thinking that I was going to get my life together. I was going to grow up, you know, but I did not. You know, for about 4 weeks, I was a champ. Once I realized I was kind of stuck, I was a champ. You know, I did what I was supposed to do, and then they let us out for a little rest and relaxation. We went to the club, and it was off to the races once again. You know, I thought because I had been sober for 4 months, I mean, for 4 weeks, that I was pretty good. I could do anything I wanted to do, you know. But no, it wasn't like that, you know. And then I went over to Korea, and that's when the drinking really took off because basically it was, you know, I did what I was supposed to do as a soldier in the daytime. But then at 5 o'clock, you know, we worked regular 8 to 5 job. And at 5 o'clock, you know, we were in the clubs, you know, and drinking until we couldn't drink no more until it was time to go home. And that's what we did. And then we'd get back up the next morning doing PT, you know, running 2 miles, you know. And it was just like this every day, you know. But I could do it all then. So I stayed in the military for about 2.5 years. But, you know, I was continuing. I was trying to get out. You know, it was time to go. It had been time to go when I first walked in that door. But I just couldn't get out. And then finally, I was able to get out. You know, after 2.5 years, they say you can transfer or you can go, you know, honorable discharge. And I was like, really? You know, and that's what I did. I took the coward's way out. But what it said something about failure to do something. But it was honorable discharge, whatever it was. But that stayed in my head a long time. I just felt like I was a big failure, you know. So I get out the military. I'm from Atlanta, you know, and I always work. My family believes in working. You don't lay around the house, you know. And I continued to work and drink. And I remember one day I went to a job and I quit that job. And I was like, it was like the first couple of weeks. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do this at all, you know. But I wasn't going home to tell my mom that. I just decided to go to the liquor store, get me something to drink, go rent me a hotel room. And stay in that room for the rest of the day until it was time to go home, you know. I told you I was sneaky, you know, always doing something. So that's what I did. And then finally I went home and said something about the job, you know. But like I said, I've always worked. So at age 25, you know, I'm drinking and doing other things, you know, in the process. So by age 25, I had got myself pregnant. Yeah, by myself. No. I got pregnant. I also got pregnant in the military. That was another reason I had gotten out too, because, you know, something happened with, I had a miscarriage and my mind wasn't right, you know, after that and just different things like that. So I did end up getting out. But anyway, so at age 25, I had another child And I was not married. But, you know, I was fine because I was 25. I worked. I could take care of myself. And I lived with my mama, you know. So everybody was fine. That was my first child. Loved her to death, you know. I continued to do what I do, you know, drinking and what have you, you know. But not while I was carrying the child. I called myself a respectable lady, you know. Good mom. Anyway, so I met this guy, another guy, after I was no longer with her dad, after we had gone our separate ways, and I met another guy, and we hung out together, and, you know, I figured pastime was, you know, drinking and stuff, right? We both worked, you know, we was functional, you know, we both worked, and so forth and so on. So about 4 years later, after I had the one at 25, I had another child at 29. So those are my only two kids. They're both girls. As far as the drinking is concerned, you know, that was my buddy, the guy. And, you know, I ended up marrying him. You know, I married him. Stayed married to him for 16 years. But we just got deeper and deeper into situations. You know, I knew after just a few weeks that I did not want to be married. But I stayed married 16 years, you know. And one of the things that he proposed was, you know, let's do a little bit of this or a little bit of that, and it'll make life easier, you know. And it did for a while, you know, but it also was the beginning of the end, you know. Busy drinking, called myself going to work. He was going to work. And then I got to the point where I wasn't able to work anymore, or I chose not to work anymore. I thought that if I stopped working, that I would have an opportunity to think about some things, to get my life together. But what it was, it gave me more time to do the things I wasn't supposed to be doing. You know, hubby went to work, children went home. I mean, children went to school. Mom was mom doing her thing. She was retired. And I left. I left and went, you know, over to my friend's house, you know. And then I'd go back home, you know. I go back home when it's time for everybody to come home. I was a functional. I was a good wife. I was a good mother, right? Good daughter. Nobody knew that I was doing these kind of things, you understand? And then some things happened where it came up a little short about money and what have you. And of course, the bills were not being paid, you know. But I came up a little short with about money, and I went to take a withdrawal from my mother's purse without her knowledge. I took her debit card and I went to the bank and I withdrew some money because I needed to. I had to get some money back to some people, you know, this kind of life I was living, you know. But like I said, I'm quiet. I'm a housewife. I'm a mother, you know, and a good daughter, and lived in a middle class area. So when that situation happened, you know, I was really sick and tired of me. I really was, but I didn't know what to do about it. I had been looking up things. We didn't have the internet, and well, I didn't have any knowledge of it if we had it, but I don't think we had, you know, maybe it was new or something. I don't know. Maybe the kids knew about it. I don't know. But anyway, I used to use phone books, you know, and I would look up treatment facilities in different places like that. So I had been looking at places, you know. And so when everything hit the fan, as they say, because a family member came to me and said, we don't know what your problem is, you know, but I got an idea, but you better do something about it, you know. And so I said, you know, I'm worried about the kids and what they're going to do, and I don't want to work ruin their summer or anything like that. And so my family member said, you know, we'll handle it. We'll take care of them. They can come with us for a little while, right? So that was good. But the only thing was, you know, lying and all that stuff continued because I just told the kids that I had, you know, causing them harm. I told them I had to go in the hospital, and my stomach, I had some stomach issues. And my sisters, yeah, okay, my family members, they thought that I was, they didn't know how long I was going to be gone or what kind of condition I was going to be in when I came back, or if I would even be able to raise my children, you know, because we're very prideful about raising our children. You know, you don't mistreat the children, you know. And so I thought I was being a good mom and everything, but like I said, I was causing some not physical harm, but mental harm, you know, emotional harm and all that good stuff. And so since everything had come out that I was drinking. You know, they wanted to keep the kids for a little while. So they didn't know how long I would be in treatment. I went to a rehab facility for like 7 days. And this was not your plush type of rehab facility. This was a county rehab facility, which was free for people who don't have insurance. So, you know, I didn't have a job, you know, so it was like all kind of people in there, you know, but they were some of the most interesting people that I met, you know, they really were. But I was in there for a week. I cried every day. I basically laid on my bed and cried every day. And, you know, I mean, that's part of, you know, withdrawal from alcoholism and what have you. But, you know, they also diagnosed me. They said, you know, you have some depression issues and you need to make some appointments with, you know, some outside agencies and so forth and so on. And I tried to make the appointments, but I couldn't get that appointment until like the following year, you know, because I was a little bit crazier then. But anyway, so I stayed in the facility for 7 days and then I got out. You know, I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to get my kids back. But like, you know, family members said, no, not so fast. You know, let's see what you're going to do, because people do relapse and different things like that. Right. And let's see what you're going to do. And plus, they're in camp and what have you. So we're going to keep them over here for the summer. But little did I know that they were also thinking about getting me to sign some papers and say, hey, you know, I can't raise these kids. You know, I still was married. You know what I'm saying? And the funny thing about all that is I was married. You know, this joker threw me under the bus. He said it was my problem. He said, I don't know what was, you know, that's she, you know, she, you know. And so, you know, I kind of took the blame of it. I took the blame for everything, which some, you know, a lot of it was my fault, but it wasn't just me. You know, I'm the only one who got caught. So anyway, so the kids stayed over to the family for the summer and everything, and then I was able. They granted me visitation privileges. In other words, they could come home on the weekends, like towards the end. And see how everything was going, you know, if I was able to handle them mentally and, you know, all that kind of stuff, you know, and what have you. So that's what happened in that situation. I did get the kids back. You know, they weren't gone legally. It was my choice, you know. I did get the kids back and everything. As far as I first tried to get sober in June of 1993. And I was going to school to be a medical assistant. And then, like I said, everything happened, so I had to take a little short leave. And they told me, we know. You know, I was like, you know. Yeah, we know. You know, I didn't tell them what I had to take the leave for, but I said I had a little problem. And they said, yeah, we know. So I was in an outpatient treatment program for like 4 months, you know, before I went back to school in October. Something like that. Maybe I went back to school in August. But by October, I was back off to the races again, because I thought that the problem was I had just drank a little bit too much. That's what my problem was. And I could do it again. But the funny thing about it, I remember when I had started back drinking, I kept hearing all this AA talk. You know, I was never the same after all those meetings and what have you. And the thing about my treatment also, we could go to two different types of, we could go to any type of meeting we wanted to go to, as long as we went to a meeting in daytime and at night, right? So I was able to go to AA and another fellowship also. All right. So anyway, so finally a year later, June of 1994, I got sober for real, you know. But I never did go back into inpatient treatment. I did that outpatient, and then I was in that women's outpatient treatment program for about a year, you know, outpatient, work part-time, you know, did that. So, you know, life goes on, children are fine. My husband, you know, I insisted strongly that he stop or get out. You know, that's what I did, because I didn't go to Al-Anon at that point. And he did go into a treatment program himself also, and he stopped for a period of time. But, you know, he likes to drink, so there you go. But, So I'm going on with life. Couldn't get a job, a real full-time job, for about 3 years. I did finally get a job. I've been on that job for 23 years now. Okay. What else? Also, I'm going to say something real quick. And like I said, I did pick up that white chip in June 14, 1994. Okay, something I'll say real quick. And I'll bring it back up later about the church deal. Okay, I was a church girl also. I told you I was a good lady. I was going in and out of several different churches, and I was getting baptized at several different churches, you know. And but I was still drinking. I couldn't wait to get out of church on any given day and go home and start getting, you know, getting right, you know. So I had to bring that in. So after I got my first chip, I was going to two different types of meetings, two different programs for a couple of years. And then I decided that those meetings are all right for everybody else, but not for me, because like I said, I deal with church, you know, sometimes. I warm the benches. I don't do nothing in church. I warm the benches. but I go, you know. I decided after a couple of years, you know, and then I started working again and stuff too. But I decided after a couple of years, I didn't really have time for those programs because, you know, I had to live life. You know, I had to live life, had to deal with my family, and just all the things that go with it. So I wouldn't go to any meetings or anything for about 3 years, and I had this sponsor lady, you know, it was fine for her to go. I told her, that was fine for you. But, you know, I would do, like, debates with her, you know. That was fine for you, but I don't have to do all that, you know. And she'd be trying to get me, well, let's go into this women's meeting. Okay, fine. You know, but, you know, all that good stuff. So about 5 years into the program, I was running around doing all kind of stuff, just thinking all crazy kind of stuff and doing all kind of crazy stuff and looking at the liquor bottles I didn't go to the liquor store. But I did go to Kroger, and those bottles were looking awfully good to me, you know. And so all these people have been telling me that the steps have set me free. Oh, I hadn't said anything about any steps, had I? Mm-mm. Because, see, I took the first step, I'm powerless. And then I saw the second step. You said, can't believe that power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. But I already knew I was having some mental issues, so... Okay, we're good, you know, and I don't really have to, and maybe I'll look at a little bit of step three, but I don't really have to go through all that other stuff, that four and all that. That's fine for y'all, you know. I had about 5 years of sobriety, and after I had finally given up, I did start working the steps. I started working with a group of ladies. My sponsor was in there at the time, and started working with a group of ladies, and we went through these steps. It wasn't big, but the fellowship. We went through these steps for 5 years. And so I said, okay, I did it. I did these steps. I never have to do them again. Never have to do them again. That's enough. Enough questions. Well, so then I decided I really like AA. I'm going to do that home group thing. I was already in it, but, you know, they didn't know my name. I sat in the back of the room. Okay, they didn't know I was in it. Same meeting. You know, and I decided that I was going to join that group and, you know, I was going to start speaking up a little bit more and everything. By that time, I had about 10 years sobriety, 10 years sobriety, you know, and I did everything I could possibly do. You know, I got a sponsor in that program also, another sponsor, so she could kind of just go through that big book with me slowly, because sitting there reading it week after week or whatever, how often I was going, I wasn't really getting it, you know. I understood it a little bit, but I wasn't really getting it. I kind of needed somebody to kind of slow it down, and I could just simply ask them questions one-on-one. And she was very good for that, and she's a very nice lady. That's what we did for a little while, just for a little while, you know. And we went on through the book and basically went through the steps again through the big book. But now I didn't tell her anything. Because I already knew everything, because I'd already been on the steps. I don't have to do those anymore. But, you know, we can chit-chat, and we can read this book, and we can do all this, you know, real nice lady, though. I got another sponsor. I guess you say, yeah. I got another sponsor. And since I already knew everything, we didn't have to do them steps either. You know? But fortunately, you know, I was going crazy again. And I ran into a real nice lady. She's here tonight. Ran into a real nice lady, and she put me on that big book. You know what I mean? We did that for a step. yeah, we did all that, you know. And she's very serious about her program. Very kind also. She puts up with me, you know. So anyway, so we do all that. I met that sponsor in like 2008. That was right after my mother passed away. My mother passed away in 2008. She had dementia. and she had and she was bedridden for 5 years, you know. And so my sisters and I, we cared for her, you know, in the home, and I took good care of her, you know. But she did pass away in 2008, and that's when I found my my sponsor. Done service work, type of service work I do, I've done is like in a group, steering. I've been on the steering committee in a group and things like that. So I did that for a number of years, you know, with my old group. It's still my group, but with my other group. So, you know, a lot of different things have happened in that time, but I'm just trying to cover what I can. I have a women's group also, which is the one I joined in 2008 after my mother's death. And that's Ponce. They're real great people, good to me. You know, they're really good to me. Friends. You know, it's one thing you find in AA. I'm just one, like I told you, I was quiet. I didn't have a lot of friends and all that other kind of stuff. But, you know, I find friends in AA. I really do. I really love AA. I love AA. I love this program. What it's like now, currently I have two sponsors, okay? That's me and my world. And two home groups and one ladies group overall. But, it's, you know, it all comes together because I can't go to everything at the same time. You know, I really can't. I've tried this. I was going to meetings like, that's why I was so glad to find that I can't, we can't group on Saturday mornings because I was able to go there. And I was also able to stay around for the sister program meeting afterwards, you know, a little while afterwards, 11:30 or so. And, you know, that's what I was into. It helped me with some issues I was dealing with and learning how to detach from people and things of that nature. What I have, as far as the steps and all that stuff is concerned, and like I said, I know I'm leaving out stuff, but, you know, y'all will tell me or I hear it. I go, oh, I should have said so and so. But, you know, it is. Let's just say it is what it is, right? Okay, my favorite steps are 10, 11, and 12, you know, because they keep me, in check, you know. I'll continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And talk about it, you know, try to do it, but sometimes you got to talk to that sponsor, you know. Sometimes you got to talk to that sponsor to get you back on track, to say get your butt back over there and step forward and do that resentment. What about those fears? You know, what about, what do they call it, the defects of character, you know. And what about step 6 and 7 and look at what you've, you know, look back at some stuff in step 8 and 9. You know, I did a lot of self-loathing, you know, and I had to learn to forgive myself in addition to making amends to other people. You know, I had to make some amends to myself. And so this isn't just, you know, it's not like, oh, you know, I'm clean and I'm sober and everything is A-okay. No, it's a continual struggle. You know, it's a continual struggle. Most days are A-okay, but some days are not. You know, some days I get emotionally off track. I love step 11, you know, most beautiful step. You know, it's just so, you know, the prayer, it's just so laid out. And then there's, you know, all of it. And then there's step 12. I have sponsors, you know, sponsees, they, you know, we do what we do when we can do it. And if we can't, you know, then we have to realize it's time to make a change. I certainly do it with my sponsors, but don't do like me. Give them a chance, you know, give them a chance. And so I love step 12. You know, haven't had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. We try to carry the message to alcoholics to suffer and to practice these principles in all our affairs. It is not just about, you know, it's about being a decent person to all those people around you, your job, your family, you know, everybody, you know. I want to give a little shout out for, like I said, I'm real thankful for the Zoom meetings and the fact that they have allowed me the opportunity to get back into my literature because, like I said, what I was trying to do on Saturday mornings, I would do that on Saturday mornings, but I have other meetings that I was only able to join on Saturdays, and sometimes I was like running around to all these different meetings, and by the end of the day, I was totally exhausted, and, you know, somebody got shortchanged, and most of the time, it was me that got shortchanged. So 9:30 in the morning just really set things off properly, and then I just go from there, you know. But I really appreciate these Zoom meetings because they've given me an opportunity to get back into my literature, because I knew something was missing the way I was doing that Saturday deal. You know, I knew something was missing. It gives me the opportunity to get back into my literature, various forms of literature. And I do love the literature. I never thought that I would put Bill, you know, I said, I don't have anything in common with this guy. You know, it's me years ago. And I was like, you know, but I keep reading. They keep talking about Bill. Seemed like every time I turned around, we was on Bill's story, you know. But anyway, I really love the literature. And I love AA. You know, I love AA. I've had many opportunities to recently. There was a in 2021, February 2021, there was the International Women's Meeting, Women's Conference. And it was on Zoom because they couldn't do it. You know, and it was based out of North Carolina, but it was women all over the world. It was 19,000 women on that call the whole week on that conference. You know, it's like 3 days of conference. 19,000 women were registered. Not they all spoke at the same time, because that would get a little, you know, hectic. But 19,000, it was like, this is the largest they ever had. Nobody had to travel. They just go to their living room or whatever and get on the call. I've also had opportunity to go to, because it was here in Atlanta, the 2015 International Convention. My sponsor was there with me doing this here tonight. And the other one might be on, I'm not sure. the 2015 International Convention, which was here in Atlanta, down at the Georgia World Congress Center, and there was thousands of people there. Oh, man, can you imagine feeling the Georgia World? Now, we're not talking about the World Congress Center. What was that place? Was it the World Congress? No, it was the Georgia Dome. Okay, now we have the other place, Mercedes-Benz, but the Georgia Dome, okay, that place was packed. All these people from all over the world. I mean, that was the most wonderful thing, running in and out of those rooms, going into the various meetings, and just seeing all these people, and everybody was just so happy, joyous, and free. You know, I've had an opportunity to see this kind of stuff. Okay, talk about my higher power. My higher power has changed since I've been into the program. Like I said, I was a church lady. I'm still a church lady, okay, but it's a different time. You know, there was a time when I was in this program that I had decided that I wasn't going back to the traditional church. I just liked being in the program. That was enough for me. You know, I was feeling something. I liked whatever it had to offer. You know, it was good stuff. And then finally, I was able to get back and find me a church, because I was still searching, you know. Didn't want to be baptized anymore, but I was still searching. And finally, I was able to find me a church. And I was able to go to my AA meetings and go to church and, you know, just all those things. One thing I like about the AA program, because for me, you know, I like the word, you know, I like God, you know, I like, it draws me, you know, but I also realized it was a spiritual, not religious program, you know, I knew that, you know, and so I didn't have to come in here, you know, doing all that, but I knew that God was there. I recognize God as a spirit these days, because, you know, just the other day, I was like, and it was like, you know, God is a spirit, you know, and I'm like, yeah, that's it, you know, so, you know, God, whatever form I choose God to be in, but God is a spirit, you know, in my life, you know. And I feel it. I feel it. I feel it in these rooms. You know, I feel it in these rooms. Lord have mercy. Okay, I stop. Okay, yes, I feel it in these rooms, you know. So I think I'm going to stop sharing now. I hope I said enough. I hope I told on myself enough. And yes, you know, my name is Wanda. I am an alcoholic, and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Thanks for letting me share.
Wow, Wanda, that was wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, Wanda.
That was great.
Thank you.
You know, that when you said about the quiet, shy you, I thought, well, yeah, that's what I see at the 9:30. And then when you speak, I just stop and I listen. Beautiful story, Wanda, and your beautiful soul. And I'm so honored, you know, that you came and you told your stories.
There is
We're made that way. There is a world of trouble. I need direction every day. Whenever the world busts my bubble, I fail to keep it simple every day. Keep it simple. Keep it simple, easy to let it go. Thank you.